From awaytogarden.com and robinhoodradio.com, this is Away to Garden with Margaret Roach, your weekly invitation to dig in and grow.
Along with my guest today, who is co-founder Ken Green of Hudson Valley Seed Company and also now of the nonprofit called Seed Shed, I was going to talk about a sunny topic, sunflowers. And we will, but in this complicated time, we'll also veer into how seeds figure into such tough moments, offering resiliency. So more in a moment, but first these messages.
Programming and underwriting support from Brushwood Nursery. For more than 20 years, Brushwood Nursery has shipped the finest selection of clematis and other vines all over the United States with full gallon-sized plant and free shipping. Their website is full of beautiful pictures and information on growing clematis. BrushwoodNursery.com. Programming and underwriting support from Garden Tool Company. Garden Tool Company's wide selection of heirloom quality tools for your gardening passion is backed by outstanding customer service, fast shipping, and ongoing support. GardenToolCompany.com.
On the homepage this late March 2020 at HudsonValleySeed.com and other seed sellers, you'll probably see a notice like this. Please be aware that because we are currently experiencing an increased demand for seeds, you may see a slight delay in receiving your orders. My guest today, Ken Green, is a founder of Hudson Valley Seed and my Across the Hudson River neighbor, and he's on the line remotely from his home to mine, cell phone to Skype, to talk about the power of seeds and also the literal bright spot that sunflowers can provide. Hi, Ken.
Hey, Margaret.
You're over there?
Yeah. How are you doing self-isolating up where you are?
Yeah. We're coping. We're learning how to cope. So it's not just me that ordered more seeds the last week or two, right? Is it?
No, it's not. And we're really grateful because, you know, some of our in-person events like the Boston Flower Show got canceled right in the middle. And we really depend on that income. And also we love, you know, interacting with all of our customers there. So we were a little worried when we were coming home early from that. And we came home to find a real increase in online seed orders like we haven't seen for years.
So is it all edibles that people are ordering? I mean, is this sort of a victory garden emotion at work, do you think?
You know, it's still all over the place. It's really interesting. We have expanded our flower offerings a lot over the years.
Yeah.
So I would say primarily our customers are still vegetable growers. But I think like you were saying, it's not even just that we're seeing more customers, but people are ordering a little bit more than they normally would, which gives me the sense that people are thinking about expanding their gardens over last year.
Right. So you're not merely a seed company person, like not just in the seed business, but as I mentioned in the intro, you have this nonprofit entity. You're an advocate for seed preservation and the diversity, both sort of culturally and genetically, that seeds represent and preserving that. And your nonprofit work speaks to that. So tell us what Seed Shed is, just so we can have, before we digress into specific seeds and eventually sunflowers, that we can understand the rest of your world and consciousness. Because it sort of relates to changing times as well and historical things. Yeah.
I mean, I still think that I like to complicate things as much as possible. At least that's what I'm told. But for me, seeds are connected to everything. And my journey with seeds started with starting a seed library, which was the first seed library in the country and was really more community focused in terms of how do we steward seeds within our own communities and what are seed sharing systems that we can set up for our communities. That evolved into the Hudson Valley Seed Company, which the idea was, can we create a model of an ethical seed company, one that's focused on a region that only shares open pollinated seeds, and that is really focused on thinking about where seeds come from, how seeds are grown, who's growing them, and how we share them. And so Seed Shed is the most recent kind of outgrowth of my 20-year journey with seeds, where We're really thinking about how do we empower communities to grow towards seed sovereignty. And in that, there's not really like a good fixed definition of seed sovereignty. I think you've talked to different people about what seed ethics means or what seed justice means or what seed sovereignty means, and you'll get a lot of different permutations of that. But for us, what we're really thinking about is, in many cases, seeds are very culturally embedded. Mm-hmm. And when we lose seeds, we lose culture, we lose language, we lose ceremonies and traditions, we lose a sense of who we are and where we came from. And so what seeds mean community by community can be very different. And so with Seedshed, we are really saying, how do we think about this larger seed system, which is mostly commercial right now, and how do we get that back down to the community level? And what do communities need to make sure they're caring for the seeds that are important to them?
Mm.
And our most, like our, one of our main programs and one of the ones that I feel most attached to is our work with the Akwesasne Mohawk Nation in northern New York, which is a partnership where there's varieties that are disappearing. And we work with the Indigenous Seed Keepers Network and our partners in Akwesasne, who are the leadership of the program, to grow seeds that are culturally important for that community back here in the Hudson Valley, which is their ancestral lands that were lost through colonization, and rematriate those seeds back to their home communities for food, for seed, but also to make sure that the culture doesn't disappear.
Mm, some of them have ceremonial roles and great traditions, don't they? I mean,
yes, absolutely. Yeah, some are like that, and some just, you know, to be able to eat the food of your people.
Yeah.
And for that to be threatened because of our current food system and the inequalities in our food system. So we're very, you know, we feel really grateful to be able to be part of some of those solutions. And so seed literacy workshops is a big part of what we do. We have the Seed People Portrait Series that we're coming out with, where you get to meet seeds through their people. And get to learn about the person and why a certain seed is very close to their heart and why it's important to them. So I'm really loving sort of this continual evolution of my relationship with seeds and understanding what seeds mean in the world.
So speaking of seeds that have historical and cultural value and also have value as a food source and other things, the sunflower. So this is a native plant of the Americas, and there's a lot of different species and so forth. And so I just want to share with people that I don't know how many years ago, maybe 2012, I had grown this sort of species sunflower. It's Helianthus is the genus, and then I say Argophyllus, A-R-G-O-P-H-Y, L-L-U-S, I don't know how you really pronounce it, the silver leaf sunflower. And I lamented out loud, I think, on the blog, like the next year when it was seed season again, I wanted to find seeds. I had had plants given to me by somebody. And I was like, where can I get the seeds for this? And I think you and I started a conversation then about this particular sunflower. It's not like the other ones, right? It's a little different. These flowers are smaller. It's multi-branched. It's kind of a gawky, I don't know, 6 or 7 foot thing, but I love it. And anyway, and it has silver leaves, felted silver leaves. So I think that's how our sunflower conversation began. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And when you write and you on a post that you can't find the seeds, of course, I'm going to be like,
you get agitated.
I'm gonna find those seeds and I'm going to grow them. I'm going to make sure Margaret has those seeds.
Yeah.
And it's kind of interesting too. You know, this is an example of how long it can take sometimes for a small seed company to get to the point where they have enough seeds to share. You know, I think a lot of people think you just sort of are like, oh, we're going to start offering the seed, and then suddenly you have it. For when we're thinking about diversity and biodiversity, you know, there isn't a wholesale source for the seed. There isn't some big producer growing this, you know, very specific idiosyncratic sunflower. So we had to figure out how to do it ourselves.
Yeah.
Which led me to learn so much more about sunflowers, because I think most of the time when we think about sunflowers, people are picturing the Helianthus annuus.
Yes, the annual sunflowers. Yes, that's been bred for its bigger, 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 you know, showier, you know, yeah.
Which were native to Mexico and North America.
Parts of Western, I think, U.S. and Canada, yeah.
To Europe and Russia, where they changed some more. And a lot of those big single, like single-headed giant sunflowers that we picture actually, you know, were developed and changed a lot in Russia before they came back to North America.
Right.
But there's way more native species than there are of the ones that we think of as sort of the garden varieties, the annuus. So the silverleaf that you grew is one of those. It's actually native to Texas.
Yeah, it's endemic there, and I think it's sort of sown around and found little locations in like some of the Carolinas and so forth, but it's basically endemic at this point to Texas.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's thought of as anything special
it's
there.
It's so unique. And you know, like lamb's ears, that
yes.
plant, like that's what the leaves are like. That silvery,
felted,
velvet, silky, fuzzy, like they're just so cool. And the leaf color kind of changes color as the sun changes throughout the day. You get these kind of grays and these blue grays and these silvers. And then it's just covered in, you know, small sunflowers. So multi-heading, it's just blooming and blooming and blooming and blooming and blooming for a super long season.
Now, this one I notice when I've grown it, and again, it's sort of this big branched gawky creature with these little flowers at various places around this funky looking plant, but it's kind of wonderful because of that silver leaf that you said. I find that it's an insect favorite, sort of a pollinator beneficial insect favorite. It seems like they just adore this plant. Whereas some of the more sort of ornamental, highly bred Helianthus annuus, like fluffy teddy bear, there's sort of nothing for the insects in there, is there, by contrast?
Yeah. And, you know, if you love birds and you love watching birds, this is a wonderful variety to grow.
Yes.
If you're doing seed production.
Uh-oh, sorry. I'm
and
sorry.
You want to save the seeds yourself, then this is a very challenging variety to grow. We had to buy little organza, like mesh bags, and tie these little bags individually around the blossoms once the seed started to form. We tried every other way of keeping the birds off of it. So it's great to grow for pollinators. It's great to grow for birds. They love it. But if you want to save seeds from it, I recommend little mesh bags, which we had thousands and thousands of little mesh bags throughout the season to protect the seeds so that we could share them.
I'm, now that you mentioned the birds, I'm remembering how the goldfinches adored it. And sometimes on all these different branches, left, right, center, up, down, there'd be like a goldfinch and another goldfinch and another goldfinch.
Yeah, they love it. And interestingly, you know, it's another one of those things where, you know, in Texas, eastern Texas, I think, which is where it's from, you know, there's specific bird species and insect species that really love it, but it actually grows really well here in the Northeast.
Mm-hmm.
But we had to learn about it first. You know, we had to figure out the timing. We had to figure out if there was actually enough of a season to produce seed, to produce healthy seed, to make it worth, you know, putting into production for the catalog. But it's wonderful to see how the species here love it so much as well, and that it can be part of supporting our native ecosystem here, even though it's something that we're planting in our garden that's from Texas.
Yeah. So I would be tempted to start this one, even though sunflowers don't like their roots disturbed multiple times. Like, you don't want to start it in tiny cells and then pot it onto a 4-inch pot and then put it out in the garden. You know, multiple disruptions, I don't think, generally. But I think this one, I would start it indoors. Do you have, is that what you do before you transplant it once to outdoors, or what do you do with this one?
Yeah, we started it early, partly to give it a head start in terms of seed production.
Mm-hmm.
But for any gardener who wants it to start blooming a little bit earlier, because it is on the late side if you direct sow it. But if you want a longer season, then I would absolutely recommend starting it early. And like you said, don't put it in too small cells.
Yeah.
You know, start it in something a little bit bigger so that you can just do one transplanting. But it transplanted beautifully. It had almost no transplant shock that we could observe. And the other interesting thing is we didn't irrigate it. And it's, you know, it's from a drier area. And so we were kind of experimenting with that, but we had no, we had a 100-foot by 100-foot plot, which was spectacular. I think I sent you some photos.
Yes.
As it was developing in the plot, but we didn't irrigate the plot at all, and they did great.
Hmm. So let's just talk through some others. So that's one species. The ones that are most familiar, as we've said, are the ones that have been derived from Helianthus annuus. And so let's talk about a little bit of the range of some of the other ones. I mentioned teddy bear, you know, the big puffy looking one. But let's talk about some of the other ones that you, or some of the other features of some of the other ones, because these are pretty special plants.
Yeah, there's so much diversity with the sunflowers. And do you know our what we call our sunflower surprise mix?
No.
So early on, when I started first growing the annual sunflowers for seed, I would bag them, not only to protect the seeds from the birds, but also because they cross-pollinate.
Yes.
Sunflowers are amazing. You know, we think of it as one flower because we're looking at that ring of petals around the outside.
Yes.
But they're actually, you know, packed with flowers. So it has the radial petals, which is part of the florets, but then each seed inside has a little flower on it too. So it's actually this like compound conglomerate collection of flowers, which is
so the
cool.
Discs in the middle and the rays that are like the petals,
right.
The disc flowers, the little tight things in the middle, the flat center part.
Yeah, those little ones. Yep,
disc flowers.
So,
yeah, and then
disc. Yep. So we bag them so that they don't cross-pollinate because the bees and insects love it. So I, early on in my, when I didn't know that much about what I was doing, I had bagged them with paper bags to prevent the cross-pollination, and it rained, and the bags, you know, melted as paper bags will do in the rain. And so then I knew that probably they had cross-pollinated, so I still saved all the seeds, and I mixed them all together. And then I grew them the next year, and I was like, wow, you know, this is even more diversity than I started with. So we call it our sunflower surprise because, surprise, you can never know. Maybe some will be maroons, maybe some will be striped, maybe some will be dwarf, maybe some will be single-headed or multi-headed. So it's a fun mix to get introduced to that kind of diversity. But then we offer lots of individual varieties, and one of my favorite is the Velvet Queen.
Yes, me too.
Which can get very, like, maroon, deep maroon. There's still a range within it. Some are more orange. Some have sort of orange with stripes. But when you get those deep, velvety, maroon flower heads from it, they are just gorgeous. And I love the artwork that we commissioned for that piece, which has a lot of symbols in it about actually feminism and women leaders throughout history, but also ties in a lot to the history of sunflowers and and seed saving for sunflowers. So it's a
great work of art
to really look at carefully and see all the different elements.
So that's for the packet on the seed packet. You have your art packs that are so beautiful.
Right.
And so for Velvet Queen, you were describing the packet. Yeah, the art for the packet. Yeah.
Yeah, the silver leaf has armadillos in it. Some people miss them because they're kind of in the shadows of the leaves. but I'm just was so excited to have a seed pack that has armadillos on it.
So
yeah, Velvet Queen has some great art too. And the teddy bear also.
Yeah. So in the last 3-4 minutes, I just wanted to ask you about some words that are maybe unfamiliar to people that are words that have to do with sunflowers, and maybe we'll do a quick exchange. Tell me what heliotropism is.
Yeah, I mean, sunflowers are just so cool.
They are.
But heliotropism, a lot of people believe that the flowers attract the sun. It's a common sort of idea. The truth, and that word heliotropism has to do with plants where they track the movement of the sun. The truth of sunflowers is they do that at the bud stage.
Yes.
Before they flower. And that's to gain as much heat and energy from the sun as possible. Once they flower, though, they actually wind up facing east. And they pretty much stay facing east.
Okay. So then there's this thing, real quick, Fibonacci sequence. What the heck?
So that's another fascinating thing about sunflowers. The Fibonacci sequence is a mathematical algorithm, and you can see this algorithm in the way that the seeds are arranged in a sunflower, that kind of inter-spiraling shape that's kind of dizzying to look at. That is the most number of seeds that you can fit in a circle in terms of geometry.
Huh.
So the plant knows how to use that circle the most efficiently to produce the most number of seeds in that shape.
And the last one I was just going to throw out is the allelopathic traits. And I know that as a bird feeding person. I only feed sunflower to the birds, and I feed shellless, hearts or whatever, kernels, because the seeds, especially the woody-like seeds, are allelopathic. They exude a chemical that makes all the plants below there not grow.
Mm-hmm.
So I get bare spots in my garden, right?
Yeah. And so sometimes people are like, oh, I'm going to grow a sunflower and I'm going to plant something at its base so that it can climb up the sunflower.
No.
And what they find is what they planted at the base kind of suffers.
Yeah.
And so similarly to black walnut trees, which we know there's very few things that can grow under a black walnut tree, and that's because it is allelopathic. Sunflowers are mildly allelopathic.
Yeah.
The advantage for gardeners is less weeding.
Yeah.
It does a lot of the weeding for you.
So
when you grow a patch of sunflowers, there's going to be less work for you in that patch than with other things.
Well, Ken, we started out talking, I did sort of a little bit of a bleak introduction maybe to this, but I have to say, just talking to you for a few minutes here about seeds and sunflowers in particular, I feel a little better, and I guess that's your message, right?
We can look at this increase in seed buying as, that people are worried or that people are freaking out or whatever. But part of it also is that seeds are hopeful.
Yes.
And they embody this sense of potential, this idea that things keep changing, that we can transform our experiences in the world through gardening, through the joy of watching seeds grow. And also this amazing possibility to feed ourselves, care for ourselves, feed our community, and care for our community.
Yeah.
All of that is in that little tiny package of the seeds. So
I
like to think that this uptick in seed purchasing is also because people have hope and they want to feel hopeful and they want to share and take care of themselves and their family and their friends and their community through growing.
Well, I vote for that. Thank you. Thank you for making the time. I'll talk to you again soon, okay?
Yeah, thanks. Always good to talk to you, Margaret.
Okay.
Programming and underwriting support from Garden Tool Company. Garden Tool Company's wide selection of heirloom quality tools for your gardening passion is backed by outstanding customer service, fast shipping, and ongoing support. GardenToolCompany.com. Programming and underwriting support from Brushwood Nursery. For more than 20 years, Brushwood Nursery has shipped the finest selection of clematis and other vines all over the United States with full-gallon-sized plant and free shipping. Their website is full of beautiful pictures and information on growing clematis. BrushwoodNursery.com.
And thanks to all of you for listening. You can subscribe to the podcast version of the show on Stitcher or iTunes or Spotify. And you can find me anytime at awaytogarden.com. or on Facebook or Instagram as @awaytogarden, and happy gardening meantime.
A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach is a joint production of awaytogarden.com and the smallest NPR station in the nation, Robin Hood Radio.